Welcome to the party, pal. This is Fountainhead Forum 31. I've got Vinny Eastwood, who is an independent journalist from the wonderful country of New Zealand down under. It's tomorrow morning where Vinny is. So how you doing, Vinny?
Well, you know, I've checked your lotto numbers and you didn't win.
Yep. That's good. Tell us, Vinny, what's going on in New Zealand right now? What's been going on for the past 3 years? Jacinda Ardern has resigned, or is resigning her position as Prime Minister.
Yep.
What can you tell us about her her career as Prime Minister?
Well, before her career started, we made a video chronicling every single political party, and the video that was most loved out of that series was a 7-minute section of the second video about the Labour Party, which Jacinda Ardern belongs to. They're red, but they're more like the Democrats. And she comes in after a Freemason scholarship gave her a degree in political science and public relations, goes to work for a PR company in England, helps to cover up a child trafficking affair involving Freemasons, and then allegedly works with Tony Blair and the Better Business Bureau, who were instrumental in cutting red tape for big business while strangling small businesses with it. And then she comes back to New Zealand, where her colleagues and mentors like David Shearer, formerly of the UN, Helen Clark, currently at the UN, and Phil Goff, who is a member of the globalist parliamentarians for parliamentarians for national growth or something like that. The name escapes me. You have to forgive me. I had to get ready for this show in minutes. When she comes into prime ministership, she's shot up the list out of nowhere, and she's with Clark Gayford, who's like a well-known TV presenter in this thing. She gets all this really beautiful, great press, and we're like, yeah, she's definitely going to take the election on this one, and especially because she's so corrupt and such a liar and such a scumbag. We didn't see anything coming, and this is before she was even elected prime minister. All right, we knew this beforehand, and people didn't listen to me, people didn't watch the video until the Christchurch mosque massacre happened, where Jacinda says, okay, we're taking all your guns. All right, we had a foreigner come over here who was reported to police many, many times, who didn't do anything, and we had a sniper training drill on the day. We need to, therefore, stop this kind of thing from happening by taking all the ordinary citizens' guns. And the shooting rates shoot up, if you pardon the pun there, quite significantly, to a rate that's like unheard of in New Zealand. We used to have maybe one gun death attributed per year tops. One year there was three years in the last 10 where we didn't have any shooting deaths at all. We had last week 20 shootings in South Auckland alone. All right. That's what happens when you take guns off of law-abiding citizens, is that criminals are now the only ones who have them, because it's illegal to have guns, and now they know that they've got a disarmed populace to prey upon. So that's step one, as well as the Christchurch call, which has massively censored freedom of speech in New Zealand, where people are, they can't even look at the evidence of the Christchurch mosque massacre because it's all sealed. They can't even ask questions about the Royal Commission of Inquiry into the attack because that's sealed for 30 years. And anybody who appears to try and read the so-called terrorist's manifesto could go to jail for up to 10 years. And anybody who watches or possesses the video of the shooting, again, can go to jail for up to 10 years. And we've had very recently Calvin Alp and Hannah Spera from Counterspin Media New Zealand, who've recently featured on the Alex Jones Show, being arrested because a while ago, like this is last year in February, and I think they were arrested in November of last year, they shared a link to a trailer to a documentary made in another country about the Christchurch Mosque Massacre. And now they are facing between 14 and 28 years, respectively, in prison because they shared a link on their Telegram. And this was a link that, according to the chief censor at the time that they posted it, wasn't illegal to post. And after it was made illegal, incidentally, it was made illegal the next day, nobody warned them or told them about that from the authorities. And they waited until after Jacinda had made a significant contribution. I think it was like a $50 million handout to the media, what they call the Public Interest Journalism Fund, where people can demonize anybody who believes in conspiracy theories of any kind. If you believe in government corruption, if you believe that vaccines are bioweapons, if you believe that geoengineering occurs, if you believe that fluoride in the water is not a good thing, if you believe that the media don't tell the truth about everything, if you believe the elections were stolen, if you believe anything that happens to have evidence to back it up, basically, you are now a misinformation spreader. And the government will finance documentaries, which, of course, Hannah and Calvin did appear in, called, like, Fire and Fury, where they basically launched a massive smear campaign against all the dissenting truth voices of this country. Myself and my colleague Billy TK excluded. Felt kind of left out. Anyway, since then, we've also had the COVID-19 health response bill launched at 4 o'clock in the morning with almost no parliamentary debate, which has superseded the Bill of Rights. So myself, I got arrested for protesting peacefully and speaking an unpopular opinion, and they even charged me with remaining silent in custody, which is a 3 months prison term. I'm currently facing charges of up to 6 months in prison and $4,000 worth of fines for that protest that we did in lockdown, specifically protesting the government lockdowns, which they did with almost no notice, like 6 hours notice. We've got a single case of the Delta variant. The entire country is going into level 4 lockdown. Right? It was just like that. It was unbelievable. So we protested the next day outside Television New Zealand, our main broadcaster here. And then after our arrest, we were held for 28 hours. We weren't allowed to call loved ones or anything like that, which was very difficult for me because it was rent day the next day. And my wife at the time, Sarah, didn't have her passwords to the bank account to pay the rent, and so we wound up having to live under, I think, 6 weeks of bail conditions whereby we were not allowed to access the internet, not allowed to have a internet capable device. The police had confiscated my phone and Billy TK's phone as well. They kept it for 9 months, and we couldn't leave the house either and go for a walk down the street. And we had bail checks every day. The cops were turning up, well, almost every day. Cops were turning up at like 11:45 a.m. bap 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 on the door, shining a flashlight at me, just making sure that I'm home. 4 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, it didn't seem to matter what time it was, there they were. And that was incredibly stressful, and I suffered a lot of panic attacks and things because of that. And the media have covered our trial, but largely the alternative media haven't covered our trial at all. even though it's relatively significant case, because our case proves, especially with our guilty verdict, we're going to be sentenced on 30th of March, that New Zealanders do not have any rights anymore. They don't have the right of free speech due to the Christchurch call. They don't have a right to defend themselves. That's why they took all the guns. And you certainly don't have a right to peacefully protest. So if you wanted to resist the government in some way, you cannot do any of those things. All right? That's how tyrannical this country has become. And it is... with, you know, great regret that I had to be one of the people who gets arrested and goes to court and all of that kind of thing to prove all this, because I prefer just having fun conversations, you know, in the studio, stuff like that, you know, David Icke or Mark Passio or James Corbett or Max Egan, you know, one of those guys. And getting out there and in the thick of it and protesting, yeah, I do that all the time and I'm really good at it, but never decided to take it to the point of arrest. And the reason why we did decide to take this to the point of arrest is because Kiwis did need to and deserve to know the truth, that they're not free. They're slaves, 100% locked, loaded slaves. And they have to wake up to the fact. Otherwise, they'll continue to be slaves, like, forever. And Jacinda Ardern has been quoted as saying, "We are the single source of truth. If you do not hear it from us, it is not the truth." She's been saying that people who are online keyboard warriors are unacquainted with personal hygiene, and they wear superhero costumes that are baggy in all the wrong places. When she was asked about whether or not the vaccine mandates would create a two-tier society, where if you're vaccinated, you have rights, and when you're unvaccinated, you don't have rights, she says, yeah, that's what it is, yep. When she was campaigning for election, she said, in response to the question, "Do you think cannabis should be legalized in this country?" And she said, "Absolutely yes," like didn't even stutter. And a lot of cannabis growers, who are what we call green fairies, where they grow medicinal cannabis and they give it to people who are sick, they don't even sell it most of the time, came out to support Jacinda in her campaign publicly. 3 days after Jacinda was elected, all of those green fairies were visited by the police and had all their plants taken off of them. So they could not supply people who needed that medicine and charged them with possession and cultivation and ruined their lives. There is rumours that have not necessarily been substantiated, as in like boom, 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 we've got all the evidence, but people have been calling the man who made this claim that Clark Gayford, the Prime Minister's what was he called? Clark Gayford's the partner of the Prime Minister. They've had a child together, Neve, and allegedly there is talk that he was selling meth on behalf of the gangs, and that he impregnated the nanny, who was from Eastern Europe, and then she was apparently deported back to Eastern Europe. Now, it sounds like a sensational claim kind of thing, but the guys who started the campaign, Where's Clark?, actually got calls from people who are working in the prisons, who are working with the police, who corroborated elements of this story. However, the media has been able to completely and utterly cover this up. And now we're looking at a major merger between the State Broadcasting Radio Institution and the State Broadcasting television institution, Television New Zealand and Radio New Zealand, respectively, at a cost of $350 million. It's going to take to over, I think, 3 years to merge these two entities into one. Now, because of the fact that the New Zealand media is owned almost lock, stock and barrel by the government, or by government-sympathising corporations who basically are involved in significant amounts of lobbying, this means that if you hear the truth on the media, it is almost a fluke. And if you hear the truth on the internet with the censorship and shadow banning and things of that nature that's happening to the voices who speak out in this country, that also is a fluke. So it becomes extremely unlikely for New Zealanders today, let alone in the future, we'll hear anything true. They might live their lives entirely in darkness without the light of knowledge, in part because of Jacinda Ardern. So there you have it. I think you muted, Chris.
Was it this bad with Jacinda's predecessor, or did it just fall off a cliff once Jacinda took over?
Oh, it was really bad during her predecessor's years, but we when Jacinda came in, we hadn't seen anything like it.
Yeah. So yeah, are a lot of these corrupt politicians in New Zealand groomed elsewhere, like England or places like that, or do they?
Yes. In 1954, I believe it was, the American Broadcasting Corporation aired a piece about Freemasonry and how they indoctrinate and internationalize families, powerful families, that have a lot to lose but also have good reputations and things of that nature, and how they send them overseas for internationalist training and then export them back to their country of origin, where they implement their globalist ideals. And that's precisely the story of Jacinda Ardern, precisely the story of previous Prime Minister John Key, who came from Wall Street.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, a lot of Americans, even in the free speech movement, don't seem to know that much about the Christchurch call, but people definitely should, because it's basically, well, it's an open conspiracy. I mean, you can look up the Christchurch call on the internet and see all these partners, and it's a partnership between all of these countries and all of these big tech companies basically to censor the internet. So it's made a lot of these big tech companies agents of the government. I mean, as far as I know, most of the big tech companies are involved with it. I mean, Amazon, Google, YouTube, Vimeo, I believe. Yeah, I don't want to accuse anybody I don't want to accuse anybody falsely, of course, but Vimeo, Quant, some of these other, I mean, there's a bunch of big tech companies. I mean, really, it's kind of in some ways you might say it was the end of big tech when these companies got involved with it, the supporters. I mean, it's, you know, if you know, Amazon, Google, Zoom, Dailymotion, Facebook, Quant, Twitter, Line, Mega, Clubhouse. I mean, lots of organizations out there on this. You may want to try to stay away from the organizations that are in on it. I don't know exactly how they're going to do it, but it's probably going to be done mostly through artificial intelligence. So do you think New Zealand is the worst country of the English-speaking world, or do you think Australia is worse? Or,
well, I mean, I'm a New Zealander, and I'm basically have an oath to say that obviously Australians are worse. But anyway, as far as corruption is concerned, New Zealand might be the worst on earth. I've seen stuff happen in this country that you just wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
And the court watchdogs and things of that nature that I used to hang out with back in the day kind of like schooled me about how things really are in this country. You can have, for example, a trip overseas to go on business, and then when you come back, your lawyer has sold your company, like just out from under you, and pocketed all the money for himself. And so what you do is you go to court and you try to sue this guy, but it turns out that the judge that's presiding over your case is one of the former lawyers of the guy who sold your company. And you think, man, that's a conflict of interest. And the judge says, no, it isn't, and then rules in the favor of the defendant. All right, you could just waltz into this country if you're in the right groups and the right clubs and things like that, and you can just mess people's lives up. You can take anything from them. You can murder people and get away with it in this country, just like that. It's a former banking colony of England. Okay, and we have a lot of money laundering that goes through here. New Zealand was mentioned 66,000 times in the Panama paper leaks. Now, that means that basically organized crime is running this country. And if you are very surprised at any point that there's a huge amount of corruption, that is due primarily to Transparency International's annual perceived least corrupt countries list. Keyword there is perceived, because what they do is they send out a questionnaire to the member countries, and the membership of Transparency International, who are some of the worst and most egregious scum you could ever conceive of, are the ones who fill out that form and send it back to Transparency International. Okay, it's like going up to a gangster and saying, hey bro, have you got any corruption going on in New Zealand? And New Zealand goes, nah bro, nah, we don't, eh? And then sends the form back blank. Then you get published as one of the least corrupt countries in the world, which suckers in a lot of people who think that it's safe here, who think that their money is safe here.
Yeah, so it almost, I mean, it. This sounds like Mexico. I mean, but obviously, nobody there speaks Spanish. I mean, it's also interesting because New Zealand is only about 4 or 5 million people. And you would think that a smaller country would have parliamentary representation that is closer, you know, to the people. For example, you have 120 members of parliament. So that would at least, you know, you would think that you might have a lower ratio of people to members of parliament, but that doesn't seem to have made a difference here, in spite of the fact that New Zealand's a small country. It sounds like it's, yeah, or is it because there's just so much money coming in from outside that corrupts things?
Yeah. I would probably say it's just the way our parliament is set up. It's what you would call a sovereign parliamentary dictatorship. So that means that once you're elected, you're in power, you can do anything you want, and nobody can stop you, okay? If you want to get rid of our access to the Privy Council and set up a new judiciary and stack that judiciary with people that you've handpicked, in New Zealand, you can do it at 4 o'clock in the morning. Just like any time you want, any time, day or night, you can pass a law and you can change and alter fundamental rights and freedoms and structures in this country. Just like that. It's no problem. No problem at all. And the police are indoctrinated. Most of them are very young, don't have very good life experience and so on and so forth, so they just kind of swallow what they're told, and they're not very well educated about what to do. I mean, they get trained for one day with firearms. Okay, that's their training to qualify as the police officer. I mean, my goodness, you need months, sometimes years, before you've really mastered any kind of firearm. And these people are so incompetent that the first time that we armed the police following the Christchurch mosque massacre, the first time a officer discharged his firearm is when he accidentally shot himself in the ass, sitting down. All right? I mean, I don't want to, you know, point fingers at the New Zealand police and say that you guys are stupid. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like a police officer comes up to you and he says, have you got any weed on you? And you go, well, I don't want to lie to you. You know, anyway, when you're talking about how things actually work in this country, you've got rings within rings within rings. So, for example, there's a institution called the New Zealand Initiative. All right, you've heard of groups like the Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations and Bilderberg Group and stuff like that. Well, there's lots of different kinds of groups like that all over the world. And one of those groups in New Zealand is called the New Zealand Initiative. One of them is called the Auckland Business Roundtable, or at least it previously was called. I think they've changed their name since then because it had a little bit too much of an obvious ring to it. And there are another set of councils. Now, what they do is imagine you had to spend $10,000 and you had to pay that by credit card in order to be a member of one of these groups. And the memberships are all the top, most powerful, most well-connected individuals in the private and the public sector, as well as being represented by members of the most powerful corporations that operate in this theatre of the world. And they have meetings together that are behind closed doors that are completely secret all the frickin' time. And there's multiple groups like this, and many of the members and corporations that are parts of one group are usually parts of the others as well. So this is what you would call the secret government, the shadow government. And they'll come up with their ideas, they'll put things into play, and the government just basically carries it out. It's what the famed activist Penny Bright called state capture. It's a very specific type of corruption where you have your corruption so ingrained in a nation's parliament that you have influence at the policy level. Now, in order to restrain anybody from doing that, that's how they keep control nationally, but how do they keep control locally? There's another council where each and every local city council has to go to approve their own law changes and local municipal audits and so on and so forth. Now, that council that I'm talking about is a private corporation, and its members are major banks and things of that nature and foreign companies who, yay or nay, anything that comes through a local council that they want. So,
yeah.
So with a completely indoctrinated, one might even be saying fascist and moronic police force to back up this kind of systemic corruption, it really doesn't look good for New Zealand. And just remember that this country is a test bed for all of you. And if it's happened here, it will happen to you. It currently is probably happening to you, and you're facing exactly the same problem. The difference is in New Zealand, it's just a smaller country, so it's sometimes much easier to see things in a much smaller place because people talk in a small town, don't they?
Well, it's also easier to implement it in a smaller country. I mean, is there any local sovereignty? I mean, do you have local sheriffs who have authority in their towns or their counties, does everybody have to get the approval of the king or queen, prime minister, Jacinda, or whoever's there?
Well, there's a number of different groups and people out there who, what would you call them? You wouldn't necessarily call them separatists, but they're kind of like sovereignty activists, so on and so forth. They've got their own licenses, they've got their own passports, and they've got their own flags, and their own licenses for motor vehicles, and so on and so forth. And they go around saying that they're free and they've got their documents to prove it, and all they have to do is put up with regularly being thrown in jail for short periods of time, and having all their assets taken off them and all of their kids taken off them, and their homes taken off them and being raided regularly. So, you know, they're freer than most.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. I mean, you know, for example, in America, in the United States of America, we have 50 states, and then those 50 states are divided up into counties, and every county has a sheriff, and that sheriff is basically the top cop in the county, and that then the sheriff is elected, and we've had cases where the local sheriffs have said, I'm not enforcing these laws coming down from on high.
Yeah, no.
And there hasn't been a whole lot that the people, you know, above them could do about this.
No, we have a national police force. It's one law for all, and anybody who tries to squeeze their way out of it gets the short end of the stick, generally.
Okay, so there's no local police. There's no, I mean, yeah, they're trying to a certain degree to nationalize the police here too.
Not in any.
There's still a lot of local police too.
There's no local police like sheriffs and what in any official capacity. There's a couple of guys who are driving around with trucks who call themselves the local sheriff and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how elected they are or what authority they have from the community or whatever. They're just calling themselves that.
So. Yeah. I just wondered because I mean, New Zealand's up, you know, because I mean, a lot of America's traditions, you know, come from England. And of course, you know, some of New Zealand's traditions come from England, but it sounds like it's went in very different directions in some ways.
Well, yeah, because we didn't have a revolution to throw off the crown. We had a crown sign a treaty that they broke, and basically happened when the crown broke treaties with the Native Americans and stuff like that. Did the crown keep up their end of the bargain?
No. And is there still a lot of fighting that goes on between the indigenous New Zealanders and the descendants of the English versus the descendants of the people who were there before?
There's some very, very pissed off pockets of humanity out there in this country who are all for one side or the other, you know, that kind of thing. But most people just really don't care and they just want to get on with their lives and stuff like that, and racism just isn't a thing. However, you know, there is racism in real fashions in this country, and there is a lot of resistance to certain forces. I mean, like in New Zealand, you're 9 times more likely to go to jail for the same offence as a white guy if you're Maori.
Yeah.
You know, and the statistics, you know, don't lie. Those are just the way things are.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a tough thing. And now everybody in New Zealand's really scared to talk about race issues and things like that. Really scared of it.
Yeah. How much of a divide is there, you know, say between Auckland and Wellington versus the, you know, the people living in the smaller towns?
In New Zealand, we have a saying that if you're from Auckland, you're called a Jaffa, just another effing Aucklander, right? And there's kind of like some sort of predilection and my countrymen to sort of poo-poo and look down on Auckland and that kind of thing. It's the largest city in the country by far. And this is where the vast majority of New Zealand's immigrants come to. Out of all the Pacific Islands, we have the most Pacific Islanders living in Auckland, New Zealand. And out of, I think, the rest of the country, we have close to 90% of the country's international immigrants. So lots of Chinese people and Indians and so on and so forth. And it's basically become very much divided. You can't tell which country you're living in anymore. Winston Peters, who was ousted out of Parliament, but he was also the person who helped to get Jacinda Ardern elected in the first place, he once talked about immigration in New Zealand. Now, we were having about 50,000 immigrants a year coming into New Zealand, and that's when we had a population of about 5 million. Now, In contrast, Finland have like 14 million people in their country, and they had, I think, maybe 500 immigrants a year. So, and Winston Peters was talking about this like in the 2010s, like I think maybe 2011, yeah. He was talking about this. And now, I mean, unprovoked, I've had people come up and tell me, Vinny, I've just come back from overseas after being over there for however many years or whatever, and I don't know what country I'm in. All right, because I don't see new. It used to be just Pākehā, which is, you know, white New Zealanders, for lack of a better word, and Māori. That was pretty much all we had here. But now yeah. We've got every colour and shade under the sun. And when you're campaigning in elections and things of that nature, there's a good percentage of the population who don't know what you're saying because they don't speak English.
So is so the immigrants are still coming in spite of what's happening with New Zealand recently with all the COVID restrictions and all this other stuff?
Oh, yeah. They've stepped it up even.
So New Zealand is – so they still see New Zealand as a desirable place to come, though, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the end of the world, man. And where yeah. do people want to go in the end of the world? They want to go to a nice Western island chain nation that has beautiful scenery and stuff like that so that they can wait out everybody else in the rest of the world, in the Northern Hemisphere in particular, slaughtering each other.
That makes sense, though. If you think about it, Australia and New Zealand have been, you know, insulated from some of these other things, like, well, Australia saw some action during World War II, but there definitely hasn't been as much down there. If you were going to wait out the apocalypse, that might be a place to wait out the apocalypse.
Yeah, like, for example, Australians worry about boat people and stuff like that. There was this big thing, even though there weren't any being able to make it to Australia. New Zealand has, to my recollection, never had any ships or boats or anything full of illegal immigrants ever turn up because it's just too remote.
Yeah, I didn't know. But New Zealand has that unique place though where it's not really large enough that it supports its own manufacturing, right? I mean, you don't really have a lot. I mean, a lot of the things like refrigerators and microwave ovens and
the company Fisher & Paykel?
I mean, is there any kind of, how much manufacturing is there in New Zealand?
We used to manufacture all the fridges and washing machines, yep, and stuff like that with Fisher & Paykel. We used to manufacture Toyotas and various other cars and stuff. We used to manufacture tools. We used to manufacture lots of things in this country.
Oh, really?
But the whole principle of globalism is that each and every successive prime minister since 1967 with Rob Muldoon have sold strategic assets of this country to make it completely and utterly dependent on international trade. So yeah, we did have a manufacturing base and we did have a good brand label, which was made in New Zealand, but now it may as well say made in China, because the vast majority of any manufacturing that goes on in New Zealand is made by Chinese companies that have come here and purchased our stuff and then send all the profits back to China as well as the produce.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. It's obviously a small country. I mean, who are some of the companies based in New Zealand that we in America might know? Are there any big ones? I mean, I can't really think of anything that comes out of New Zealand that I would know.
Have you heard of Weta Workshop?
Weta Workshop, no.
Have you heard of the Lord of the Rings?
Oh yeah, Lord of the Rings. Yeah, certainly. I mean, that was movie making. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you heard of Avatar?
Oh yeah, Avatar. So you had some movies made there. Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah.
So the Weta Workshop is probably one of the premier. I mean, you've seen Star Wars, right? Any of the new Star Wars movies?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
So they subcontract, and if you go through the credit roll and you wait till the end, you'll see where all the digital design workshops and things of that nature, yeah, have landed in, and Weta Workshop's almost always there in the big Hollywood blockbusters. But those are the ones you might have heard of. As far as the rest of them, you know, I'm not 100% sure if Anchor Milk or any of these things, because it's all internationally marketed. Now, I believe at one point, the one thing that's really the most important brand label in New Zealand is the All Blacks, you know, the black with the silver fern on it. That's kind of instantly recognizable kind of worldwide. But yeah, as far as companies you guys would have heard of, you definitely haven't heard of Snacker Changi Chips, and you definitely should. You probably haven't had any Twisties or Rations. I don't know about like confectionery and stuff like that. I don't know. Cadbury Cream Eggs. Have you ever tried
Oh, yeah, Cadbury Cream Eggs. Do you think the person coming in after Jacinda is going to be just as bad or even possibly worse, or do you think there's any hope now that she's leaving?
I don't know. Somebody's put in the chat here, Steinlager. Have you guys heard of Steinlager? No?
No, I haven't heard of them.
Oh, well, it's a beer.
You know, so do you think things will get... I mean, do you think things will
get better? Okay, now, with Chris Hipkins, he's the new kid in town after Jacinda is, and apparently they knew about a month beforehand whether or not Jacinda was stepping down, and they'd already made the changes so that he could immediately pick up the slack, where she said she would be out by at least February 7th, and she was out like nearly a week ago. And so, yeah. Now, Chris Hipkins has been quoted as saying he basically wants to hunt down and vaccinate everybody who is not wanting to be vaccinated, you know? All right, so if that doesn't bode well, and he's been friends with Jacinda Ardern for a long, long time, ever since the days of when she was in Socialist Youth International, which is a communist organization designed to indoctrinate youth and then turn them into communists and then send them back to their country to convert it into communism. Whoa, how did this happen? So I can't say for sure if it's going to be better or worse. Like, frankly, she doesn't have much to leave in the gap, because she is such a rock star personality. Everybody, everywhere. You can't frickin' walk around or go in a supermarket in this country without her face plastered all over every single woman's magazine kind of thing. You cannot avoid it, all right? Jizzy Ardern, you just see it everywhere, all right? And in elections, it's even worse, all right? Every single corner, you know, you go around, it's just boom, Jizzy in the face. You know, you go around another court, boom, just in the face again. You know, it's kind of inescapable. And they had these little posters around that said Aroha, which means love in Maori, and a picture of Jacinda Ardern, just a picture of Jacinda Ardern that just says love. oh my goodness, it's been a sickening and disgusting thing that we've gone into this rock star personality. But with Chris Hipkins, goodness knows, you know, little guys, they, when they get a lot of power, are just the same as big guys when they've got a lot of power. They just tend to abuse it, you know, and he belongs to the same groups and clubs as Jacinda Ardern and all the rest of the scumbag prime ministers in New Zealand's history. So it's like, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. We're arranging deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, pick your cliche.
Yes. Well, yeah. And of course, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Yeah, there's certainly a lot of truth to that, Vinny. Vinny, do you think that the average citizen of New Zealand at least deserves some of the blame for all this? I mean, are the citizens of New Zealand victims, or are they at least, maybe they're in part willing victims, or do they want to live under a government that abuses them?
I mean, have a look. The answer is obvious. Yes. Yes, New Zealanders are cowards. Yes, New Zealanders are stupid. Yes, New Zealanders are lazy. Yes, New Zealanders are apathetic. They don't care. They're not brave. They're not bright. They're not moral people. New Zealanders, by and large, the vast majority, are just trash. Bad people. Now, I say that and it sounds very, very harsh, but I've lived here my entire life and I guarantee you it's true. And all you got to do is have a five-minute conversation with these people about politics. And as, what was it, Winston Churchill once said, the best argument against democracy is the five-minute conversation with the average voter.
Well, yes, and of course, there's also, you know, what, like what Jordan Peterson has also said, you know, do not fear strong men, fear weak men. And if you have weak men like this, some of the people that are coming into the prime ministership, it's not going to look good. Has this been, has it always been this way, or do you think it's just gotten worse, say, in your lifetime? I mean, was it like this 50 years ago? Was it like this 100 years ago?
Oh, yeah, it was like this basically the whole day since day one. I mean, there was once a time when, I think during the Depression and stuff like that, the New Zealand government wasn't so bad. But it's always been about oppressing the local population and keeping it in control as a Bank of England colony for the Rothschild family. Yeah, it's always been this way to a degree. It's just at the moment it's gotten so ramped up with the progress of globalism, because people in New Zealand are too weak, too stupid, too cowardly, and too frickin' apathetic to do anything about it. Those are the four horsemen of the apocalypse right there.
Does it create a situation where the best people leave New Zealand and maybe to England or go to Australia or go to some other country? And
yeah, if you want to meet the good New Zealanders, stay where you are. All right, like New Zealanders travel the world. The best New Zealanders.
I don't really know that many New Zealanders over the years. I don't know Lucy Lawless. I mean,
that's my cousin.
Of course, Lucy Lawless made comments praising Jacinda Ardern, so I naturally wonder how good she is.
Well, she's my cousin, and
really?
Yeah, first cousin.
Oh my goodness! I did not know this, Vinny. This is a very interesting thing.
Yeah,
Zena the Warrior Princess is your first cousin.
I will show you. Just keep talking to the audience, and I'm just going to grab something off my wall for you.
Yeah, sure, Vinny. I'll gladly. I mean, this has been a pleasant surprise for this interview. I mean, obviously, I wanted to talk about politics, but if you're related to Lucy Lawless, that's pretty cool. Anyway. Oh, yes.
Of course, the things are very bad here. I'm not sure exactly how much.
Yeah, I don't really know what she's been doing since Zena, but she's certainly been
the thing with Lucy Lawless there, and that's her signature up there. It says, Vinny, happy birthday from your cousin.
It doesn't really show. I'm not really seeing it, unfortunately. I'm just seeing your background. Oh yeah, there's the picture. I see if some of her other
blacking out in the background or something like that.
Yeah, I see her other warrior princesses. Yeah, we don't really have that good a view of it, but anyway,
here we are. So you can see that I'm holding something. Bloody green screen. All right, I'll be back in just a second. You can put the back on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, this was always a. I love a good surprise during an interview. Yeah, you're. Yeah, it's interesting. I saw some other people saying some nice things about Jacinda. Why do so many of these people apologize for Jacinda, I guess, is the main question I asked. Did they? Yeah, she's...
Okay, I'm back.
You get put into that sci-fi pigeonhole and you never get out of it, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
She's also pretty tall, isn't she?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't she like 6 foot or something like that?
Yeah. I had a conversation with her once about climate change. You go, Lizzie, why are you so adamant about this climate change thing? Is you know that kind of like that cult type eye, you know, the very wide eyes sort of thing? You go, it's the most important thing in the world, you know. I'm like, oh no, you know. Look,
well, if you're a star, you know, whether it be TV, movies, or whatever, you're supposed to go out and support all the cool causes. So, you know, being an advocate for saving the Earth from whatever is part of that deal. I mean, you know, you got to say I'm behind the good cause. You know, it's just like all the people who put up basic pictures on their on their Facebook pages, you know, whether you put up a flag, you know, to say, hey, I just got my vaccine or whatever, you know, you say, yeah, I support the current thing, the current thing is.
Well, we had in New Zealand, we had a yellow circle around the face that says, I'm vaccinated for Aotearoa. That's the Maori word for New Zealand, right? And one of my listeners, Laura, she was just great. She had the same yellow ring around her around her head, and it says, I've got a stupid yellow circle around my face.
But
cracked me up for days.
I think this does put into perspective just how small a country is. I have you on here, and then I find out you're Lucy Lawless's first cousin.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Oh, if you think that's mad, you should be cruising around with me and Billy TK. Billy TK is related to virtually everybody in this country. Like, there's a phone call from an auntie or an uncle or a nephew or a niece or something like that coming in every 28 minutes or something, or they bump into people at a gas station on our way down to Wellington to attend a protest or something like that, and it turns out that he's related to them. It's just like crazy.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about, you know, the legacy media in New Zealand, the government, the politicians. Is it also safe to assume that the college professors and the college administrators are also on board with all the nonsense that's happening in New Zealand?
They're totally on board. All right. They are 9 months pregnant on board. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've never seen intellectuals scramble together to really sucker so many people in with their scumbaggery before. Once Jacinda Ardern was in power, you know, any kind of outside dissenting voices, intellectual or not, were just basically not allowed.
Who, you know, obviously you, Billy TK, who were the main dissent against the COVID regime in New Zealand, or how much was it? Was it 5% of the population? Was it not even that high? Or who was dissenting against all this?
Well, at the height of the election, I think we were in lockdowns and stuff like that, and Billy TK was number one, and I was number two. I've always been here, you know, since like 2008, I've been on the streets and interviewing people and stuff like that. I've got like a couple of thousand interviews with a couple of thousand people, and it's all gone now, all deleted. Yeah. So, you know, I was, you know, pretty high up. I was the only one, let alone being number one. And then Billy came along and took number one spot, and then me and Billy got arrested, and then Chantel Baker took the number one spot. And then Counterspin Media came along and took the other number one spot. And in between there was Liz Gunn, who was pretty up there for a little bit of time with the Baby Will case. And I think we've got, you know, a bunch of larger and lesser people, you know, Sue and Kiwi are good, and Karina Ruiz. And who else? I'm forgetting that. DK, of course, DK. Or as DB123, he's in the chat room right now. He's always on. He's always streaming. He's done more streaming than I think anybody else in this country ever has. He's been doing 24-hour streaming for like nearly 2 years now. Is it DK? I think.
Oh, yeah.
And that's incredible, man. Like, I've never seen anybody do that much streaming. So it takes a good noggin in your head to handle that kind of job. So we've got some good people here in New Zealand who are doing a lot of good work. And I'm very grateful to DK. He was the only person of the New Zealand alternative media, large or small, who contacted me after the arrest. You know?
Yeah. So, Vinny, how'd you get into all this?
Well, same as most people, a lack of options.
So there was nothing else you could do, so you became an independent journalist?
Yeah, got busted by the cops, can't trust the government, certainly can't work for them, and then got let down by employers and got kind of shunted aside, so I couldn't work for private sector anymore, and been watching way too much Alex Jones, what I consider to be way too much Alex Jones. Just went out there with a megaphone and go, I will resist your tyranny! I'm going to sell the supplements and buy my bone broth! You know, I had I had good fun trying to do that for a while, starting in about 2007, 2008. But then, you know, you find your own voice, and you become yourself, I think, and you learn to trust yourself. You know, I'm the kind of guy who can just talk to the top intellectuals or people in the world and get them to laugh. I got David Icke to laugh. I got Mark Passio to laugh, you know. I got G. Edward Griffin to laugh. This is what I do. I talk to the best of the best, and I get them to have a freaking good time. And that's what we all really need at the end of the day in the truth movement, is that if you're not having fun while you're doing the show, your audience isn't having fun either.
Yes. Yeah, if you got, if I Passio is somebody who probably would not laugh easily. So if you got Passio to laugh, I'm impressed. Mm. I like Passio, but he's Passio's got that preacher, but he also lights a fire in you. Really, he's the kind of guy who definitely motivates you to act. Yeah. Mark Passio. Yeah.
I reckon we should,
did a good Alex Jones too, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. We need to do a new, a new mental disorder, you know, classified under the DSM as Passio aggressive. You know, it's just like there's a very specific type of aggression that he puts out. He just really doesn't care how you think. You know, that kind of thing. If you're wrong, that's it. He's going to lay you out. It's great.
Passio does have that. I think he was a preacher in the Church of Satan or something for a while, so he's definitely learned how to be the preacher, which is good and a bad thing. I just wondered if there was any particular event that inspired you to, you know, get into journalism, or if there was anybody who inspired you, or any of your heroes, or any books you read, or maybe you just, you know, started watching Alex Jones and you decided you wanted to be the Alex Jones of New Zealand.
Yeah, but it turns out I became more like the Luke Rutkowski of New Zealand. Getting out there all the day, and then I became kind of the Alex Jones of New Zealand. That's kind of actually what people call me on the side, is the Alex Jones of New Zealand, and he is who largely motivated me. But I spent 6 months, I think, watching at least 2 documentaries a day, and maybe listening to about 3 hours of US talk radio a day. Before I kind of like started getting into doing it myself. It's just a geometric realignment of how you think about things if you're consuming that much information that quickly. And so just like a lot of other people, you know, you just basically go nuts. You can't think about anything normally, you know. You can't live normal life without screaming and yelling at people, you know. Baby, do you want the cupcakes with the purple icing or the yellow icing? 9/11 was an inside job! Can't you see we're all slaves? Like, you know, just you have difficulty adjusting to the new reality. And I did. And basically going out there and meeting up with all the mentors, the people who've raised me, you know, raised me up as it were. A lot of all those people I saw on the Alex Jones show and just sent an email out. It's like, hey, would you be interviewed by me? They're like, yeah, sure, fine. I'm literally not getting paid and nobody listens to me anyway, so I'm going to come on the Vinnie Eastwood show. I don't know who the fuck that is, but, you know. And that way you get all the best people in the entire world, because honestly, people who are really smart and have a lot of knowledge love nothing more than to share it for free with the world. And all that's they true. Require is somebody to ask them.
What was the first thing you covered, or when did you start doing this work?
I think I got a payout of $11,900 worth of Westfield Shopping Center vouchers. So like I could go to a mall and spend like 10 grand if I wanted to. But I didn't. Okay. I spent a good chunk of it on an Apple Mac, a tripod, and a Handycam. And then I went out and I just self-taught everything like that. Just find out where the protests are, find out where the activists are, go and interview the people who are speaking on the megaphones and got the microphones in their hands and stuff like that after they're done speaking. Find out what you can from them, etc., etc. Just doing the citizen journalist thing, like I was being encouraged to do by my American brethren. You know, without the American Truth Movement, there would be no New Zealand Truth Movement. You know, you can take that to the bank, because I started the New Zealand Truth Movement. All right. The vast majority of people who've actually come through the New Zealand Truth Movement and stuff like that, they've either known me or been helped by me. There's plenty of other people who haven't and that kind of thing. But my influence in this country is absolutely undeniable. And I get told regularly by people, you know, if it wasn't for me back in the day, they would have committed suicide. Or I inspired them to live a better and a different life, or I inspired them to start their own truth broadcasts and stuff like that. I've trained many of the people in here, like Hannah Sperra, who's now really big and got to host the Alex Jones Show with her partner Calvin there. I was her first interview, and I was the first live stream that she did. She went down to a protest and she couldn't live stream because she didn't have 1,000 subscribers. I gave her access to my YouTube channel so she could live stream a protest for the first time in her life. You know, there's a number of people in this country who recognize the value that I've had to it and the value that I've really contributed to the wider truth movement. And likewise, there's a lot of people who don't appreciate it in any way, shape or form. And if I ever even bring up any of the stuff that I've done for my people, for my country, for the world, for the truth, for decency, for honor, their eyes glaze over and they don't want to listen. So that's the way the cookie crumbles in this country, man.
Oh, I hope they're good cookies, but anyway, yeah, that's how the cookie crumbles. So what gives you hope in New Zealand? What do you think could maybe make New Zealand turn back into a country where there's freedom and justice and no corruption, as opposed to the New Zealand that you live in now?
Okay, well, I'll just respond like this. Sweetheart, hope is not for men like me, okay? Hope is for the people who listen to men like me. Because despite the fact that I don't have any, I can still give it to others. Because even without hope, I still don't give up. I still don't stand down. I still don't do what I'm told, even though I'm massively threatened in every conceivable way that somebody really can be. I still don't stop doing what's right just because it's hard. I don't. That's what gives other people hope. Hope is not for me. It's yours. It's everybody else's. My job's just to do the work.
So that's why you stay in New Zealand then?
No, I stay in New Zealand because I'm stuck here. Criminal convictions and things like that. Goodness knows if any country would let me in, especially in this international climate. Who knows, they might. It would be lovely. But of course, you've got to have money to travel and you've got to have a passport, and I could get like $200 together for a passport. That would be great. But yeah, man, with COVID and deplatforming and everything like that, I think I'm on maybe $4,500 a month less than what I was earning before Jacinda Ardern came into power and the Christchurch call and all the censoring and deplatforming and demonetization phenomenon happened. So yeah. I'm struggling massively. And my partner, Rebecca, is 9 months and 2 days pregnant at present. So we've got another baby on the way. And it's, you know, it's a real struggle to survive on a day-to-day basis when your job is to do good and people reward you based upon how much good you do. And I do a lot of good, but not many people see it anymore, you know?
Yep. So who's demonetized you? Who's canceled you? I mean, YouTube or what? Yep. What platforms?
YouTube demonetized, then cancelled me and deleted all three of my channels. I had 65,000 subscribers collectively and about 6,000 videos. And Patreon cancelled me without even telling me they cancelled me. And Twitter deleted me. They didn't say why. They just said that I went against their community standards. I was like, what, all of them? And Facebook have shadow banned me. I've got 11,000 followers on that. If I do a post, I get, I think, maybe two reactions. Who else has censored me? I don't know. I think that's about the main. Yeah. So if people have heard of it, they've censored me.
Okay. Yeah. Just wondered it. So do you think there's any chance you might, if things get cleared up, you might ever leave, or do you think you're just going to stay there and try to try to fix the system there?
If you said to me, Vinny, here's $200, go get your passport, and here's two plane tickets to the United States for me and my partner, I would go tomorrow, just like that, you know? It just hasn't eventuated yet.
Yep. Oh.
And then even if I decided to go and then did turn up, then they asked me about any questions and stuff like that and criminal history, and then I've got to worry about what's going to go on there. Will they let me in? Will they not? You know, with my criminal history, you know, because I've been busted with for selling cannabis, possessing cannabis, and for protesting peacefully. So, you know, it looks like a clear troublemaker to me, to anybody. You know, it's just like...
Oh, yeah. You know, getting back to Christchurch, do you think that was a false flag of any kind, or do you think that was just one crazy guy acting on his own?
Oh, man. If I had the thing on me, there's the Christchurch Mosque Massacre in 5 minutes, as I told to Press TV. And I think the day after the Christchurch Mosque Massacre, I had false flag expert Ole Damegaard on the show. That got censored. And then the day after, I had false flag expert Kurt Richard Haskell on. That got censored. And then day after, I got on Chip Tatum, and who's a former CIA assassin and orchestrator of false flags himself, personally. And that got censored. I think it's all exactly as the government says, you know, bro, like just... just chill out, you know? I mean, all it was a foreigner who came over here and got reported to the police, and the police didn't do anything, and then he hunted them down and just shot a whole bunch of people and then pled not guilty. And then when the country got locked down in 2020, he then pled guilty when no media could actually report on the thing. It's not like the Royal Commission that investigated themselves and what actually happened on the day ruled all their findings were going to be secret for the next 30 years. It's not like the guy who allegedly committed the crime is being held in solitary confinement permanently at a cost of $40,000 a month to the New Zealand taxpayer and is not allowed to have visitors or any media contact him, you know? It's not like there was a C-130 Hercules suspiciously landing at Christchurch Airport with a whole bunch of people on board that have actually been seen flying around the world, coincidentally at times of other alleged false flags. It's not like there was a drill on the day for a sniper cover and things of that nature so that people would be confused as to whether or not it was a live fire exercise or something like that so that it would give the people who actually perpetrated the crime to get away. It's not like there were people like dressed in red directing the actual killer as he's going along his route to the frickin' assassination. It's not like there's cars and things of that nature that are highly suspicious that have been photographed on the day that haven't been seen since that got away after the guy shot up the place, you know. And it's not like there's, you know, varying accounts from people at the other mosque, the Linwood Mosque, as to whether or not somebody actually was there. So, you know, it's about as suspicious as you can possibly get. You know, Kurt Richard Haskell, he wrote out, I think it was 40 points about how you can tell a false flag is a false flag. And these are 40 things that would happen during a terrorist attack that would not happen at all, probably, if the terrorist attack was genuine. Now, I ran through the media coverage and all of the things that have been publicly reported on the day. Out of the 40 points, on day one, I think there were about 26 things that could not possibly happen in a genuine attack that we recorded on day one. And by the time we got up to, I think it was 7 days, there were 36 out of 40 sides of a possible false flag. Okay? So if it's not a false flag, I'm Hillary Clinton.
Okay, well, that's certainly a, so that's certainly a very interesting case that we got there. Is there anything else that we should be aware of that's going on in New Zealand right now, or...
We are drowning in just water, you know. We had the worst rain, the wettest day in history in Auckland here. We get, I think maybe the previous record was really, really long time ago. I don't even know what year it was. I think it might have been 1956 or something like that. It was 160 millimeters of rain. All right, that's a lot of frickin' rain. And over this last weekend, we got 250 millimeters of rain. All right, I heard an eyewitness account that a guy was in his car on the side of the road, parked up just in the rain, and all of a sudden a wall of water just comes right down the street and covers his car, and he drowns. Just like that. It happened in seconds. And been reports of chemtrail activity before the storm and during the storm, and I took a photo of a stratospheric aerosol injection myself. It's a technical term. And so they're using weather weapons on New Zealand right now, in my opinion. They're using weather weapons in New Zealand to destroy the infrastructure and the city itself so that they can remodel it in their more Agenda 21-ish type style. And also, it's a great shock and awe campaign to distract from the fact that they don't have their saviour Jacinda Ardern here anymore. And, yeah, man, if you want to know what's going to happen in the future, look at New Zealand. You know, they test stuff here. We've got FPOS. I don't know if you guys know what that is, but you know when you put your credit card in, you can pay for stuff with a credit card? That's like that here, but it's with your bank account. So very few people use cash, so we might be the first to go cashless. And, you know, it's a terrifying thing, actually, being in this country, like feeling like there's no escape and the suicide rates are up, like, to catastrophic levels. You got people dying suddenly all over the place from the jabs. You know, it's, I think, a very stressful and difficult place to live if you look. But if you don't look, and you just come here as a tourist to see the mountains, to frolic on the beaches, to parasail through the sky, and do all those wonderful things that the largest industry in New Zealand, which is tourism, does, you'll really enjoy your time here. But if you live here and you look at how it actually works here, it might be somewhat less enjoyable. You know, do I sound like I'm enjoying myself? No. No, I don't, because I look and I see what's going on, and it terrifies me and anybody else in this country who has a conscience. And if you're in the rest of the world and you think you're safe from this kind of scumbaggery, you're not. it will come for you too, just like it came for us. So be vigilant and be aware.
Yeah, that should be interesting. So do you think New Zealand might learn something from all this, or the people of New Zealand might learn something from all this, or are they just going to keep rolling over and playing dead? I mean,
oh yeah, I assume so.
You know, what happens, you know, in the aftermath of all this, because the
Stefan
people who were right are going to end up being okay if they're still there or if they haven't left the country.
Yeah, well, what Stefan Verstappen said is just basically take the target off your backs, everybody, okay? Go underground, and this system's going to come up. It's going to roll over absolutely everything. You're going to have no choice whatsoever. They are going to get control. But because they're completely insane psychopaths, what's going to happen when they've all got shared control? Do you think they're going to continue sharing it peacefully? No, they're not. The elite of this world are going to slaughter each other before long, and you won't have to live under their regime forever. Even though it seems so big and so powerful and so on and so forth, it's really, really weak at the seams with all these psychopathic scumbaggery in charge, and they will kill each other. And then we're going to come out and we're going to tell people the one thing that you never want to hear from a conspiracy theorist. We told you so.
Yeah, but will they care? That's the whole question. I mean, I certainly find this a very interesting but interesting prospect to see where we're going to go. What's besides the new kid, how many kids do you have by chance?
I have one to my ex-wife, who I don't, I get to see 0.4% of the month, and who I'd have to go and bankrupt myself to in a court or something. Maybe I'll get legal aid, maybe I won't. In order to get to see her more at this point.
Yeah.
And my new partner, Rebecca, she's due any day now. In fact, she was due two, 3 days ago. So our little boy, we know the sex, is going to be named Alfie. Little Alfie Eastwood. He's going to be very cute.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to that. And we're looking for a pram at the moment. I think it's like a... I think it was like a $90 or a $250 pram or whatever. So any donations and stuff like that would be helpful at VinnieEastwood.com, ladies and gentlemen. So, yes, thank you so much.
Yeah. Is New Zealand promoting divorce the same way that they promote divorce in America? Or do they still respect fathers in New Zealand? Or?
Oh, no, there's no respect for fathers whatsoever.
I didn't think so, but I just thought I'd ask. You know, it's a... That's pretty much another case in the West. I mean, what do you think is the future for Western civilization in general? I mean, it seems like it's been committing suicide, you know, really ever since the publication of the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah, suicidal nihilism. All right, I think that's the future of humanity. A whole bunch of people are not going to believe anything, and they just want to do things until they die from it. You know, that's the future. Look out for it. It's around every freaking corner, isn't it? Suicidal nihilists going left, right, and center, mate.
Yeah. Do you think there's anything that can save the world from this, or do you think it's or is there just nothing, or is it just hopeless? I mean,
well, like I said, like Gandalf said, there never was much hope. Just a fool's hope. And even if you don't have any hope, even if you don't think you're going to win, doesn't give you an excuse to sit down and do nothing. All right? Even if there isn't any possibility that you're going to win, you owe it to every generation to try. Because every single generation that exists subsequent to this will be living in a frickin' post-apocalyptic kind of epoch. All right? And that will be all on you. And so if anybody asks you, what did you do when they tried to take over the world and destroy everything, you know?
Yeah.
And you want to be able to truthfully say, I did everything I could.
Yeah. So where can we find Vinnie Eastwood out there on the interwebs?
On that point, though, I once said to Cliff High from halfpasthuman.com, that humanity is like a spring. And when you push a spring down, it resists you. You push it all the way down, it resists you all the more. And you have to hold it with incredible pressure. And the second you let up that pressure, punk, there you go. That's humanity's freedom, all right? That's our human spirit. And Cliff says to me, no, Vinny, use an organic example. Humanity is more like a water spring. And what happens when you try to push down water that's coming through to the top? It starts burrowing sideways, going through mud, through sand, and through stone, and then starts bursting through to the surface from places you couldn't possibly comprehend. That's what our human spirit is like. So George Carlin said, F hope. Hope blows. All right? Don't fight the big bully because you hope to defeat him. Fight him because it's the right thing to do. And you need no further justification than that.
Yep.
I'm Vinny Eastwood from VinnyEastwood.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, ladies and gentlemen, make a donation or check out the thousands of shows that we've done on the archive section. Every show is good and fun to listen to. And you can end a show feeling relaxed. Okay? That's the whole idea. You come in to hear about all this terrible stuff that you really don't want to know and you really don't want to hear at the end of the day. If you be honest with yourself, you don't want to know this stuff. You don't want to hear this stuff. But you do it because you should, because it's obligated of you. But that doesn't mean you should spend the vast majority of your time being incredibly stressed out by it. Okay?
Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, slaves of the global plantation. The Vinny Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child trafficking Satanists is Vinny's jokes.
Oh, we need more journalists like this. If it's not going to be fun, then what is the point? Oh, well. Let's hope for the best, Vinny, in New Zealand. It's been good having you on here. I'm Chris Baker. Please hit the like button, subscribe, go buy my novel, Escape from the Village, and we've had a really good show here, and I'm going to sign off. And thanks for coming in, Vinny. It's been great having you. So,
thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Peace out. Yeah, and thanks for the voices. So, bye-bye.